Israeli forces kill and injure nearly 90 civilians waiting for aid in northern Gaza as the regime's genocide enters its 160th day. The leader of Hezbollah says Israel is paying a high price in its war with the resistance in Gaza and Lebanon while trying to hide its losses. And UN says a Reuters reporter who died in southern Lebanon last October was killed by Israeli tank fire at a group of clearly identifiable journalists. Our top story, Israel's genocidal war in Gaza is now in its 160th day, with the regime pounding the blockaded territory with more airstrikes and artillery fire. Israel's latest strike hit an UNRWA aid distribution center in southern city of Rafah, leaving 5 Palestinians dead. Israeli forces also opened fire on a group of Palestinians waiting for aid in northern Gaza, killing at least 6 people and injuring over 80 others. A regime air raid targeting a home in the Jabalia refugee camp killed at least 1 civilian and left several others injured. In Rafah, 2 civilians were killed and others injured after Israeli forces bombed their vehicle. The Gaza Health Ministry says nearly 31,300 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have so far been killed in Israel's campaign of genocide since early October. Over 73,000 others have been injured. And joining us earlier for an update from the central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah was Moti Abu Musabe.
The Israeli warplanes attacked a group of the Palestinian civilians waiting for the humanitarian aid before the gate of a distribution center belongs to the UNRWA in Rafah City. At least 6 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed over that attack, while dozens were injured. Previously, at least 2 civilian cars were destroyed and attacked by the Israeli warplanes in Rafah City. 3 Palestinian civilians were killed as a result of those attacks. In the meantime, when it comes to Khan Yunis City, at least 17 dead bodies of the Palestinian civilians actually were extracted from the rubble of those destroyed houses, particularly in neighborhood in Hamad neighborhood, located in the western part of Khan Yunis City. It's worth mentioning that Hamad neighborhood has been under heavy bombardments and attacks for roughly 3 consecutive weeks, and these attacks are still underway till this moment. More destruction unfolded after the Israeli occupation forces withdrew from several parts of the surrounding area of the neighborhood. The vast majority of the buildings and the Palestinian houses were partially or totally destroyed and devastated by the chronic Israeli airstrikes and attacks that reach everything in that area.
U.S. decision to build a temporary port off Gaza's Mediterranean coast is a misleading measure aimed at buying time for the Israeli regime. This, according to Deputy Secretary General of Palestinian Islamic Jihad Movement, Mohammed Al-Hindi. He said construction of the port could lead to displacement of even more Palestinians. Hindi added those who want to send aid to Gaza should open the territory's crossings instead of proposing to establish a port. He stressed the U.S. administration has been a partner in Israeli genocide in Gaza from day one by providing the regime with weapons without congressional permission. Hindi stressed apparent disagreements between the U.S. and Israel are not genuine and are only related to their tactics. He said Israel seeks to separate north of Gaza from its south with American cover and reduce its area by creating a buffer zone. Joining us now from the U.S. Capitol is Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink. For more on the story, hello, Medea. We got this so-called European ship going from Cyprus to the coast of Gaza. It should be there in a couple days. And Medea, it has the equivalent of 1 or 2 trucks of aid on it. It's a nice gesture, but it's not efficient and it's not sufficient. The Gaza needs between 500 to 700 trucks a day, or people are going to starve. 1 or 2 loads and the so-called port. Your initial thoughts on it and its efficacy.
my thoughts that this is just a charade for the United States to act as if it cares about the civilians in Gaza when it has been for 6 months supporting the Israeli genocide and refusing to put the pressure that's needed on Israel to open not only the Rafah crossing, but also the other border crossings between Israel and Gaza. So it is ridiculous for the U.S. to send in all of these military people to build a, quote, temporary port. I mean, we know Gaza has needed a port for a long time, not a temporary port, a real port under the control of the people of Gaza, just like it needs an airport, which it had until the Israelis bombed it. So this is all a charade that the people in Gaza see right through and understand that this is not because the United States is their friend.
And even if it's not for theatrics, if there's really, truly, genuinely, which according to this gentleman from Islamic Jihad, Al-Hindi, it's not. But suppose it is that there is actually a rift between Washington and Benjamin Netanyahu and his cabinet in getting aid to Gazans, that supposedly the U.S. wants to make it happen and the Israelis don't. Can't the U.S., Medea, in your point of view, doesn't it have the leverage it needs to make it happen, to get those ports open, to say, hey, if you're not going to respect the ceasefire and we cannot force you to respect the ceasefire and you're not going to be able to kill them with bombs and artillery and also with withholding food, you have to open these borders or we're not going to give you another $14 billion in aid. We're going to cut your $4 billion a year. I mean, doesn't the U.S. have profound leverage to make it happen if it wants to and stop the starvation of women and children in Gaza?
Absolutely. We are totally opposed to this idea of sending $14 billion more to Israel in the midst of this genocide. And it's unfortunate that the White House wants to do this and says at the same time, we're sending food and bombs. You can't do that. We also think that it's important, as you say, to cut off the yearly funds that the U.S. is giving to Israel and to stop using the U.S. veto at the United Nations to give Israel diplomatic cover, not to even call for a ceasefire. So the biggest way that the U.S. could show its displeasure with Israel is not through words, it is through actions. And those actions would be to cut the funds and to stop providing diplomatic cover.
All right. Thank you. Always a pleasure to check in with you and pick your brain. Stay safe. Thank you for joining us on the program. Medea Benjamin, co-founder at Code Pink, joining us from Washington, D.C. Meanwhile, leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says Israel is incurring significant losses in terms of military personnel in Gaza and Lebanon, and its army is worn out and tired on all fronts.
Israeli soldiers, this is a very tired army, and let us just see that they are exhausted. It's not just to say that there's, of course, there's hunger in Gaza, there's destruction of homes, destruction of buildings. This is just one part, but there's another part as well. The numbers of Israeli soldiers killed or wounded is a huge number, and there is a unity that the numbers are much higher than what the Israeli army is actually announcing. Some are saying three times, some saying four times the number. Let's take an example.
Speaking in a televised address, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah noted Israel is covering up its military losses and experiencing a severe shortage of soldiers, where the regime's resorted to recruiting thousands of people, even from the ultra-Orthodox community. Nasrallah said in the Northern Front regime is imposing strict censorship on information about losses in terms of soldiers, military vehicles, and other assets. The Hezbollah leader noted the senior Israeli experts and former ministers have admitted to strategic and economic losses the regime is suffering. Nasrallah also commented on U.S. support for the regime, urging Washington to halt Israeli aggression instead of helping it. And regarding the conflict in Gaza, Nasrallah said the regime has lost the war as it's failed to achieve any of its declared objectives, including the eradication of Hamas. A UN investigation has found Reuters reporter who died in southern Lebanon last October was killed by Israeli tank fire at a group of clearly identifiable journalists. Probe says that UN personnel did not record any exchange of fire across the Lebanese southern border for more than 40 minutes before Israeli Merkava tank opened fire, shelling wounded six other journalists. One of them later had to have a leg amputated. Some investigative reports had reached a similar conclusion prior to the UN probe. Rights groups called the incident a deliberate attack on media workers, saying it amounts to a war crime on the part of the Israeli forces. According to Palestinian media, regimes killed more than 130 journalists and media workers since its genocidal war on Gaza started last October. Joining us now from Montreal is John Philpott, international human rights lawyer. For more on the story, hello, John. Hope you're safe and doing well. Thanks for joining us on the program. Your thoughts on the regime systematically and deliberately attacking media workers there in Lebanon and in Gaza?
I think three or four points. We saw Shireen Abu Akleh murdered last year by Israel, and now it's carrying on. And the figures, I had figures of about 120 or 130. The right to information is enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And ironically, the 3rd of May, 2023 was World Press Freedom Day. The access to information, and I live in the West, the access to information is central to stopping wars, informing the world. And this goes to do with Gaza. It has to do with the war in Russia, the war in Ukraine, the NATO war on Russia. And they are now killing these people, which is murder, but it's also a violation of the right to information. And we maybe should think about how the world finds out about what is happening in these wars. There's no doubt that the Gaza war has got a certain amount of information, but for example, but the real stories haven't come out. The real stories of October 7th have not come out, not in the West anyway. And I'm going to make one comment about media in the Western world and North America, which is very important. Press journalists cannot speak out. If they speak out and talk about, for example, the Nord Stream being bombed by the US, they would be fired. So in Israel, in Palestine, they kill the journalists, and here they muzzle them like this. They prevent them from speaking. So information, the information war is part of the entire war. And unfortunately and tragically, the murder of these journalists, courageous journalists, is a major tragedy. We are getting information. Instagram is very good for information, but there's still a lack of information in the mainstream. And the mainstream cannot provide complete and full information. Al Jazeera has lost how many? Four or five journalists? I can be corrected on that figure. I don't know the figure. But Al Jazeera has a large circulation.
And their relatives, John. Go ahead. And their relatives. A handful of journalists of Al Jazeera, along with their relatives, children, wives, extended family.
Yes. So we see the horrors of starvation, willfully killing men, women, and children. But another aspect is the destruction or the prevention of the right to information. Because if we had more information, I think there would be less wars. I'm sure there'd be less wars if we had the truth out about the war. And we started with the war in February 2022, NATO war on Russia. In the West, we don't know about that. And they're all interrelated. I do not want to detract from the urgency of Gaza, but all these wars are interrelated. And the lack of information allows particularly the West, who are the agents of war, to prevail.
Now, I couldn't agree with you more, John. Now, if you're the Israeli regime, John, along with its number one ally, the U.S., along with the Europeans, and you've designated Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad as terrorist groups, and you believe in your rightful mind that you are fighting terrorism, that your cause is high and mighty and prudent, to your point, then why are you going after and targeting the flow of information?
Well, asking the question is answering it. And we have, I live here in Canada, we have printed in our mind, in the subconscious, that Hezbollah are terrorists, Hamas are terrorists, Palestinians are terrorists. I don't think that, but I have a little bit in the back of my mind still. And my friends and family are stricken with these lies. Not that our friends and family are trying to understand or are progressing. But this is a war of information, and we will see the American election. We saw Joe Biden's State of the Union speech, which was a bunch of lies. We stand by Israel, and your previous speaker from Code Pink, Media Benjamin, explained very clearly the attitude of the U.S. and the fact that the U.S. doesn't really care about providing humanitarian assistance. They provide guns.
I mean, before we let you go, it's very ironic in the Ukraine war, if due to Russian strikes, one or two journalists were perished as a result of a casualty of war, John. It gets a lot more coverage than over 130 journalists killed since October 7th there in occupied territories.
Well, the double standard in the media is striking because, rightfully or wrongfully, they accuse Russia of violating the sovereignty of Ukraine, but many other wars where countries are invading and violating sovereignty, they don't talk about it. They don't talk about Israel bombing Syria, which is a violation of Syrian sovereignty. They do not talk about Saudi Arabia and its war, which is now, there's a ceasefire on Yemen. So there's a big double standard, and the universality of the rules of the UN, which are the ideal of the multipolar world, which we're seeing, the ideal of the BRICS world we're seeing, sovereign equality of nations, non-intervention in internal affairs, these are the principles which must prevail in the next 6 months, right away. But these principles are going to become the rules which define the relationships between nations. I mean, Iran and India, for example, or Iran and Pakistan, and I'm not talking about the details. You have to respect each other, that's all. You can't intervene in your internal affairs. And these are the principles which we have to, which I think must become part of the consciousness of our world governments and the populations. And these are the principles. I was born in 1946, and the UN Charter was adopted then. And these principles are not being respected now, even though the UN Charter, in my opinion, is a valid document. I'm not saying it shouldn't be changed, amended, but it should not be emasculated. It should be improved to provide for the Global South having a better representation in the Security Council and elsewhere. But that's another subject.
All right, John. Always a pleasure. Stay safe. Thanks for joining us on the program. John Philpott there.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Joining us from Montreal.
Good night. Good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night there, John. Thanks for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says there will be no agreement with the Israeli regime before full cessation of its aggression against the Gaza Strip and withdrawal of all its military forces from Gaza. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The head of the Political Bureau of the Palestinian Resistance Movement Hamas says there will be no agreement with the Israeli regime before full cessation of its aggression against Gaza and withdrawal of all its military forces from Gaza. Ismail Haniyeh made the remarks in a televised speech on Sunday evening, 10th of March, on the eve of the holy month of Ramadan. Haniyeh said, "We do not want an agreement that does not end the Israeli war on Gaza Strip or ensure return of our displaced people to their homes, or an agreement that does not guarantee the withdrawal of the Zionist enemy from the Gaza Strip." Ismail Haniyeh stressed that any agreement with the Israeli regime must also address humanitarian issues in Gaza, including provision of relief, aid and shelter, as well as reconstruction of the territory, while ending the Israeli siege and guaranteeing a dignified deal for the exchange of prisoners. Ismail Haniyeh added, "We absolutely do not want an agreement that does not address humanitarian issues of our people, especially in the northern Gaza Strip, where children, the elderly and women are dying because of hunger imposed by the enemy." The head of Hamas's political bureau added that the movement has shown the highest degree of positivity and responsibility in order to achieve an agreement based on these principles. Haniyeh noted that any possible agreement should be implemented in three stages and must include international guarantees to oblige the occupying regime to abide by it. Elsewhere in his remarks, Ismail Haniyeh emphasized that the Zionist enemy bears full responsibility for not reaching any agreement during the ongoing talks, as it avoids giving any clear guarantees. Haniyeh said, "I tell you clearly, responsibly and impartially that the enemy has so far refrained from giving clear guarantees and commitments, especially with regards to stopping its war of aggression against Gaza. Hania affirmed that Hamas and its leadership are open to continuation of negotiations and any formula that would end the aggression against Gaza and Israel's crimes against Palestinians. In his speech, he also mentioned that Hamas will not compromise on any drop of blood of a child, woman, elder, or fighter from our people. Meanwhile, the Israeli military have attacked hundreds of Palestinian worshippers heading to the Holy Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Quds to perform Taraweeh prayers, preventing their entry into the sacred site. Eyewitnesses said the Israeli military detained Palestinian citizens at the gates of the Al-Aqsa Mosque during Sunday evening attack, 10th of March, and impeded their access to it, according to the Palestinian Wafa News Agency report. Israeli military have also imposed restrictions on young men entering Al-Aqsa Mosque to perform Taraweeh prayer, only allowing women above the age of 40 to enter. The Israeli regime has been imposing a strict siege on the Al-Aqsa Mosque and blocking Palestinians' access to it since 5 months ago, when it started its war of genocide on the besieged Gaza Strip. Israel has also issued dozens of deportation orders against Palestinian residents of the city of Al-Quds to prevent them from praying during the holy month of Ramadan. Reacting to the regime's restrictions on the holy site, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement issued a statement on Sunday, 10th of March, warning that Israel is playing with fire. The desecration of the blessed Al-Aqsa Mosque by the occupation and the settler gangs and their restriction on the movement and access of Palestinian worshippers to it is playing with fire. Meanwhile, the leader of Yemen's Ansar Allah movement has reiterated that the Yemeni nation's unflinching support for the Palestinian cause, emphasizing that the country's armed forces will continue their retaliatory strikes in the Red Sea during the holy month of Ramadan. Speaking in a televised speech from the Yemeni capital Sana'a on Sunday, 10th of March, Abdul Malik al-Houthi said the Yemeni naval forces will press ahead with their campaign in solidarity with the Palestinians. He praised the people of Yemen for staging mass pro-Palestine rallies across the country on a weekly basis. Abdul Malik al-Houthi said the demonstrators who converge on the Al-Sabin Square in Sana'a every week are doing a great job. They're treading the righteous path, he said. The Ansar Allah chief went on to describe participation in pro-Palestine rallies as highly important, noting that the mass rallies send a clear message to the enemies that Yemeni operations against the Israeli regime, United States of America and Britain, particularly with regards to ships in the Red Sea heading for Israeli ports, are supported wholeheartedly by the Yemeni population. He said it's a matter of pride for Yemenis to be recognized as the noble warriors with a clear understanding of the Muslim world's sufferings and miseries of the oppressed Palestinian nation. VOA News has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Israeli regime and the Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement Hamas have traded blame over the deadlock in negotiations just before Ramadan, which begins on or around 10th of March and is observed by Muslims worldwide. A Hamas source told the Reuters news agency the group's delegation was unlikely to make another visit to Cairo, Egypt over the weekend for talks. Egypt, the United States and Qatar have been mediating negotiations since last January. Under a draft of the current ceasefire agreement, 40 captives would be released in exchange for dozens of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas blamed the Israeli regime for a deadlock in the negotiations, saying it refuses to give guarantees to end the war or to pull all its military forces from Gaza. Israeli officials have said the war will end only with the defeat of the resistance movement Hamas. In a statement on Saturday, 9th of March, just before the start of the blessed month of Ramadan, Hamas's political chief Ismail Haniyeh vowed the Palestinians will continue to fight the Israeli regime until they regain their freedom and independence. Meanwhile, dozens of Palestinian families in the southern Gaza city of Rafah were left homeless on Saturday when the Israeli military struck one of the largest residential towers there, claiming the block was used by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. The Israeli attack on Rafah has stepped up pressure on the enclave. At least 1.5 million Palestinians have taken refuge in the southern Gaza city of Rafah.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Muslim Ladies. Like always, we're here to talk about women's issue. And once more, I have the honor to be your host. Well, this is Asma, and here with me, I have Sister Rehane. Well, actually, she's going to introduce herself pretty much perfectly for you. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome to Muslim Ladies.
Thank you very much, Sister Asma. I'm Rehane Paisapal, and I'm happy to be here with our dear listeners. I hope you have a wonderful day today.
Of course we would have. Since it's all ladies, then it's going to be wonderful. Well, just for the record, she is an Islamic researcher, and she works on ladies' issues and whatever that matters to us as ladies generally. So, previously on Muslim Lady, I remember the last point you mentioned was so eye-catching, actually, and I'm still thinking about it. Like, hijab is not just a material thing. Like, you wear hijab physically, and then you let go of the other parts of your soul to just wander the way they like. It's not just a true sort of thinking, I suppose. Even in our religion, when they talk about hijab, they actually mean the both aspect, the physical and the metaphysical, like the part that is related to your eyes, to your ears, to your mouth. Everything must be covered and have a hijab.
All the aspects of hijab, of course, it's not just for women, the hijab. And we have other aspects like hijab of, like having hijab for your eyes, meaning that you mustn't look lustfully at the opposite gender. So this, of course, not only applies to women, but also applies to men. So
and thank you for bringing that up. It's for men as well, because it's not just the appearance. It's about the way you think. I guess hijab is a lifestyle.
Yes, of course. Yes, obviously. So men must also refrain from leering at women, and women must avoid this as well. So looking at non-mahram men for women is okay to the extent that is just for having a conversation maybe in society. Like, you cannot go about in society just and avoid looking at men whatsoever. But the thing is that it has to have a boundary.
Your attitude, actually.
Yes, like, it's, you have to look with an innocence. Like, you mustn't look at someone lustfully. The moment you feel like you've started to feel things by looking at someone, you must lower your gaze immediately. So this is the hijab of your eyes. And it also applies to men, obviously. More, exactly. I think, than
more.
Women.
Yeah, more even. And more.
And another part is hijab of your thoughts. So even you're not in the presence of another man, but maybe you start thinking about someone, you have to immediately stop yourself, distract yourself. And again, this applies to men as well, maybe even more so than women.
Yeah, the fact that this program is for Muslim ladies and we're addressing them does not mean that whatever we say is just for women. No, of course, Muslim men also have to actually follow these rules and think about them. At least, you know, I usually say that to know something and to do your best accordingly is one thing, and to know something and ignore it is another thing. So when I know something and I say, okay, I would try my best, even though sometimes I would fail, it's even, still it has got some values and worth in it. But for those people who know it and at the same time they ignore it or they say, I don't believe in it, that's a totally different story. So yes, hijab is very much important, not just physically. We have hijab of the soul, of the gaze, of the way you think, of the things you hear and the things you say. And we're talking about that, actually. So let's go for a short break and then we'll be back. Thank you for staying with us. Welcome back, dear ladies. You're listening to Muslim Lady, and we're talking about hijab, and Sister Rehana is in here to help us, actually. So we were talking about hijab not being the lady issues. It is an issue for every single member of the society, because we're responsible toward each other, because it's not just that you cover up your beauties. It is also to cover up the doors that are opened, and not let the unwanted guests get into your brain and to your thinking and into your heart. You know, it's all about the stains. It's all about your heart not to get stained by a different sort of sicknesses and disgraceful colors of vice and things like that.
Another aspect of hijab that I wanted to touch up on is hijab of your manner. So the way that you behave in society and towards the opposite gender. First of all, I'm going to talk about, of course, the women's responsibility in this. Nowadays, we see in society, in media, that men and women can be friends, just friends. And can be nothing else underneath it. But that is the furthest thing from the truth. So even
Since it was such a big lie, they're starting, like I'm seeing nowadays, there are some talk shows talking about the fact that people, like the ones who said it once, is starting to say, no, there is no such a thing to say that, okay, men and women can be friends. No, eventually one of them is going to get into the trap of more than friend.
Exactly. So it's men and women just cannot stay platonic friends. Even if it just starts out that way for a short while, it just cannot stay that way. Islam offers hijab of your behavior. So you have to behave in a way towards men where you don't unintentionally lead them on into thinking that you're maybe like even just friends, like even being friends is just will not have a good ending. The way that we behave towards men must be telling that I am not just being friendly with you because I like you. I'm just being normal. I'm just being polite because you're a person, you're a human being, and nothing more.
I'm just practicing humanity.
Exactly.
You and must, manners.
Yes, you mustn't be friendlier than usual, or maybe you're usually very friendly towards everyone, and you might find that you have to tone it down when you're interacting with another man.
Exactly. Because now that's very important, because you see among even your friends and your classmates, sometimes you see that some people naturally are that warm and so sociable. But then when it comes to men, they do not know that the way they're behaving is actually telling other people more stuff than just being friend. Men would get some other stuff from the way they're treating them.
Yes, they assume that you're interested in them.
Exactly.
Men just think differently than women, generally.
So I usually say that to have borders in the way you treat other people, be it a man or a woman, that's a better way for you yourself. You know, it would save you all the problems that might come into you. It would help you yourself. So even if you are so friendly when you come into a new environment, when you meet new people, try not to give them these sort of green lights you don't wish to give. Because, you know, people have got different connotations from different stuff that you do. Maybe you do not have in mind to convey it in that way. Maybe you do not wish whatever you do or say, or even the choice of words. I sometimes notice the bare fact that maybe you have a special choice of word for your own self, and you do not mean anything extra, but unfortunately, some people would take it the other way. So you should be very careful. Actually, being an active member of society is not an easy thing. You have to watch every single thing you do.
Yeah, so the way that you talk, like the way that you use some words, like maybe you are naturally a joking person.
Yeah.
So you have to be careful of that when you're interacting with people of the opposite gender. That,
keep it for your friends.
Yes, the way that you laugh, like you might not even know it, but it might be alluring to the opposite gender.
Exactly.
And you just start laughing and
you know nothing about it, actually. You have no intentions, but unfortunately, as if history is any indication, if the other relationship of other people in this world have been any indication to you, then they do have an effect on other people, especially the other gender. So let's go for that break, and then we'll come back with No Heartbreak.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
So, welcome back. This is the last part of today's episode. Still, I have to thank you for staying with us. I hope it has been fruitful for all of us. I mean, like Muslim ladies, we have to think about different stuff, and maybe whatever Sister Rehana mentioned in here are the stuff that I have long taken for granted, and I have to think about them again and again. So these stuff are being added in here in order for us to rethink about them, to have a check upon those stuff, those points, and see how thoughtful and considerate I am of some very little and delicate issues that I might not think as important.
Yeah, so up until now, we talked about different aspects of hijab. We talked about the fact that hijab is a necessity in society, and if you have chosen Islam as your religion, then Islam is something that you have accepted already. And it's just somehow a battle within yourself to try to observe the hijab more and more every day, like try to be better at observing it. So if you've accepted Islam, then that means you've accepted the hijab.
As a Muslim lady, I accepted Islam. Now I'm called a Muslim lady. I have to go for the details.
Exactly. And another point that we talked about is that hijab is, contrary to some belief, it's not just about the physical appearance. It's not just covering yourself, your body, your hair. It is also about your thoughts, observing your thoughts, manners, and the way you speak and the way you look at other people. And another thing that we talked about is that hijab is not just for Muslim ladies, even though usually that is what people talk about when it comes to hijab. Hijab is also for men, even in regards to their physical appearance.
Exactly.
Yes. But especially and more so when it comes to their gaze and their thoughts and their maybe their manners as well.
And also we have it in the narration that your gaze is an arrow from the devil.
And finally, we talked about the fact that when it comes to hijab in your behavior, some people might not realize that they're not being very modest in their behavior. They're being friendly towards other men as they would to other women. So the best thing, the best way to observe the hijab in that way is to avoid friendships with men altogether.
Maybe the things that you're doing or saying are not meant to be taken the other way as men usually take it. But have it in mind and do not call these things old-fashioned sort of thinking, because trust me, they still exist, and still all of these matters that we're concerned with are the old and archaic stuff that have been there since Adam and Eve. So do not take these things for granted and just think about them and see and evaluate your behavior the way you are actually claiming to be a modest, obedient. Try to just look at it again and again and see if it's really the way it must be or no. You have to rehash your old stories and watch your actions again and again. So, Muslim ladies, this was all for today. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting for something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
Dubbed a mighty legal battle waged by South Africa at the International Court of Justice, ICJ, against the Zionist regime for its genocidal war against Palestinians in Gaza, some apologists for the Zionist entity have raised the mantra that the case was a futile exercise. To their dismay, however, the top UN court upheld South Africa's request and ordered the Zionist regime to take all steps to prevent genocidal acts in the besieged Palestinian territory. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RSCB wrote, between then and now, all evidence points to the fact that not only has the Zionist regime disregarded the ICJ ruling, but has blatantly acted against it by intensifying its murderous campaign against Palestinians in Gaza. It is due to this flagrant violation of the ICJ ruling that the Geneva-based human rights organization, the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, issued a statement calling on member states of the Hague-based ICJ to cut off all forms of political, military, and economic relations with the Zionist regime. In an important exercise over the course of the 4 weeks since the ICJ decision, and as part of monitoring South Africa's lawsuit against the Zionist regime for violating its obligations under the Genocide Convention, Euromed Monitor has documented several Israeli regime violations since October 7, 2023. Six fundamental indicators were used by Euromed Monitor to track Israel's level of compliance with the ICJ ruling: mass killing, causing serious physical or mental harm, imposing living conditions meant to purposefully cause material destruction and starvation, obstructing the delivery of humanitarian supplies, imposing an environment meant to prevent childbirth, and public incitement to continue committing genocide. The result of the Euromed's monitor's research demonstrates that, from evidence it examined, Benjamin Netanyahu's army is still carrying out genocide against the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip. The persistent violation of international law and the Geneva Convention in utter contempt of the highest court of justice has led 50-plus countries to make oral submissions to the top UN court based in The Hague on the illegality of occupation, settlements, and apartheid. Though these are distinct from South Africa's genocide case, they point to widespread global outrage against the Zionist regime's arrogant behavior, and unprecedented indeed for so many countries to emerge one after the other and fearlessly make formidable legal arguments as to why the ICJ should hold Israel accountable. However, the first important test these countries have to pass is one of integrity. The second crucial test rests on whether they are committed to acting under strong concerns. According to Euromed Monitor, during the period since the ICJ ruled a halt on genocide, Netanyahu's army has killed over 3,847 Palestinians, including 1,306 children and 807 women, and injured approximately 5,119 people, bringing the total number of Palestinian deaths since October 7th to 38,067, including 14,350 children, 8,620 women, and 8,000 people who are still buried beneath the debris of demolished buildings or on the streets. And the bloody juggernaut rolls on in utter disdain for the prohibitions imposed by the ICJ. It's a pattern all too familiar with Palestinians who correctly argue that, while denunciation is necessary, the Zionist entity will remain defiant unless accountability is enforced via concrete steps. The necessary actionable steps are recommended by Euromed Monitor, with which the Media Review Network concurs, include cutting off all political, economic, and most importantly, military ties. Unless such measures are undertaken, the apartheid colonial entity will regard it as a license to continue its genocide against the Palestinian people. It's important to note here that, on the same score, 30 UN experts have demanded an immediate halt of arms exports to the Zionist regime. They asserted that any transfer of weapons or ammunition to Israel that would be used in Gaza is likely to violate international humanitarian law and must cease immediately. They added, such transfers are prohibited even if the exporting state does not intend the arms to be used in violation of the law, or does not know with certainty that they would be used in such a way, as long as there is a clear risk. Referring to the ICJ decision, the UN experts rightly conclude that the need for an arms embargo on the Zionist regime is heightened by the International Court of Justice ruling on January 26, 2024, that there is a risk of genocide in Gaza and the continuing serious harm to civilians since then. Far from normalizing with genocidal Israel, as some Arab despots are inclined to do, solidarity with Palestine's freedom struggle requires a comprehensive boycott and effective arms embargo of the apartheid regime.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.